in a conversation or in a workshop where it was possible, in a situation where a lot of my physical activities, just listening and taking things in, I would have paper, pens, paints, and just allow myself to doodle or paint just to facilitate the flow. It's different for different people, but for me, if I'm not allowing myself something to do, it could be painting, it could be moving. Conversations where you walk and talk, in my experience, are always the most fertile because you're staying fluid.
Throughout history, the great questions have been asked and great research has been undertaken, always expanding the territory of the known by shining a light into the unknown. Where is that cutting edge today? And can a community of people from all over the world, each carrying their own unique journey of discovery, come together to inquire at the edge of purposeful evolution through conversation? At Portals of Perception, we think it is possible, and we hope that you will choose to be a part of this exploration.
We are starting this conversation about art by entering through a side door and exploring the idea of art as a conversation, an evolving conversation. And what comes to mind is that there must be several parties involved to have a conversation. Who or what is art talking to? What is passing between us? It's thinking of art as a space where it becomes possible to inspire, to make contact, to create a new connection, to find a new kind of intimacy with life. Join Aviv Shahar as he talks with Aud Wilkin and Rita Lampin, two lifelong artists, about their love of art, the sources of their inspiration, and what is possible through a deeper awareness and appreciation of the true nature of living art in Art as an Evolving Conversation.
Today, we are in conversation about art. And because art is just such a large domain of exploration that includes so many facets, we're going to try to enter this conversation, at least in the beginning, bypassing the big questions about what is art, what is the function of art, and all those large questions that people that make a living talking about art look to address. We're trying to bypass these questions and start by finding an entry through a side door or a back door, by looking to develop an exploration about the idea of art as a conversation, art as an evolving conversation. And the first thing that I think about when I hear the phrase art is a form of conversation, I think, well, there must be several parties involved if there is a conversation going on. And so I'm going to invite Aud and Rita into the conversation, perhaps first to introduce yourself into this space we are exploring today. See if you can find an entry with what comes alive in you when you hear the phrase art is an evolving conversation.
I think we are gifted with a cornucopia, really, of pathways of art that allow for us to communicate, to relate, to translate, to connect, and that art, in whatever form, and we're not narrowing in or honing in on any particular one of them, allows us to come into a different kind of connection and to not simply repeat a certain amount of vocabulary about life, but to expand it and to also find inside of it a way to deepen the connection and deepen the intimacy with life. It is like an absolute gift. And I think that I've always felt a great freedom inside of art. And the less I separate them from each other, the more access I feel in a way I have in myself, to myself, and through myself to other things. It also allows for there to be less separation of whatever I consciously am aware of has to do with living. And when longing comes on the scene, some kind of nudging or longing, art allows me into the search for that in a completely different way than if I were to just think about it or speak about it. It kind of turns, I think, the walls between the unconscious and the semi-conscious and the conscious into curtains, so that there can be a real traffic in a way where things can drip in and have a conversation with each other as well. It's not just about me. I get some of it, I simply get to witness, partake in, and some of it are messages perhaps to me as one of these amazing human beings on the planet.
Yeah, very rich a sense of intimacy with life that you're describing, making contact, creating a connection with something that's in the moment appearing that you're able to access.
Well, when considering art, the first thing that comes to mind is actually a series of little snapshots of moments, little cameos, very, very early and much later memories of how art has got into my life. And they're just quick memories, such as being 2 years old and hearing Brahms's Hungarian Dances on the radio and basically dancing wildly until I dropped. Or actually, strangely, around the same age, my mother got hold of from printers of these huge, big, thick rolls of kind of unprinted newsprint. And presumably when I wasn't dancing, I would fill meters and meters of this paper with drawings of people and animals and things going on. And it just wouldn't end. It went on for years and years. And, you know, not to go through my whole life journey, but what strikes me about experiences like that in terms of art as a conversation, it's just a curious mystery that I would not want to live without, is what talks to what when, let's say, an artist sees a view that they want to paint or they want to photograph. What is it about that view that catches them, that they want to spend more time with? And this is a kind of question that does not beg for an answer. It feels more like it begs for being with, in the same way as an artist would sometimes hours, sometimes days, weeks, months, be with a particular scenery. You know, what is that particular vitamin in that scenery? Or in other arts, what is it about certain combination of sounds or about movements that is so compelling? So it's a question that I would never want to be fully answered in my life in order to keep the door open.
Another thing that comes to mind that I'm reminded of also when I hear you speak, Rita, is how humans can inspire each other. So suddenly the conversation due to that, and possibly even also in the realms of an art, perhaps of singing, of responding to something through painting or really whatever form, that it becomes almost this plasma that humans can find a different kind of mutuality in that actually oftentimes really moves people and moves them. And I think in that moment, then it's almost like art becomes the trigger for a deeper conversation or perhaps also a different realization of that we are all and we can all be part of this call and response. That's this ongoing and again, this ongoing conversation that doesn't have one question and one answer. It really more is something that keeps things moving. And the moment we stop exploring or stop feeling that we have something to offer inside that exploration, it's almost like the conversation, at least in us, sort of pauses or becomes stagnant. And it's a very feelable difference. And so I think also humans have this ability to trigger and to inspire each other through poetry, through art, through music, which then allows everyone greater access.
So we are beginning to, through what you're both describing, paint art as an exploration, paint art as a form of conversation. We're trying to discover what kind of conversation is art. We are, you're painting art as space, really, where it becomes possible to inspire, to make contact, to create a new connection, to find a new kind of intimacy with life. And as we speak, there is a deer just walking into our yard just in front of me. I'm not going to turn the camera on the deer, but and she is looking directly at me.
Wow,
that's awesome.
And so that's part of the art of the moments of life.
And, you know, in that moment, it really triggers in me this sort of this magic that is perhaps oftentimes more fully alive through the imagination in childhood, because there's a deer that wanders through here that I see and that I saw also earlier today. And in that more childlike imaginative state, for me, it's the same deer that just turned up where you are. You might be somewhere completely different, but why not? And I think that kind of allowance of imagination that sidesteps sort of the dominance of the brain saying, oh, that's just silly, or that is not logical, and all these things that does give us entry into a different world where things go on and move and are much more possible than we so often think. And it reminds me actually of an experience I had when I was, I don't know, maybe 4, 5 years old. And we were listening to this LP, which had different German fairy tales on it. And there was this one fairy tale about the clouds and how they represented sheep. And a certain type of clouds was this herd of sheep in the sky. And suddenly my mother calls from the living room and says, girls, girls, quickly, come and look. And on the side of the living room, there was a little ways away, there's a little park. And the park was filled with sheep and a shepherd. And I'd never seen that before. We were kind of, you know, in Berlin, not in the downtown area, but we were in Berlin. And you know how these kind of moments, they really can cause, it's a disorientation, actually, that it causes from how you perceive reality. And it suddenly like draws the curtain away and says, hang on, there are more dimensions at play than you usually allow yourself or are allowed to see. And in a way, it's amazing. You stand on air and with the sense of your faculties and your mind and senses being able to go anywhere.
What you're describing as disorientation is our experience as allowing ourselves to be infiltrated by those other realms that we are searching for, yearning for, seeking to come into contact with, such that we can be uplifted from the banality and the mundane realms. And it's not as though we cannot find the extraordinary and the supernatural hiding right inside the mundane. We can. I think it's often art that allows us to enter those portals of possibility.
I can't resist a quotation that someone told me last night. It's by Albert Einstein. And apparently he said, if you want a child to become intelligent, read them fairy tales. And if you want a child to become more intelligent, read them more fairy tales. And, you know, it's a delightful quote unto itself in its puzzling nature. but it actually makes so much sense if you think of intelligence as something beyond the capacity to store up facts and figures and make sense of them, but more like a different multi-dimensional way of mm-hmm. perceiving and translating the world and being able to have traffic or conversation between these different dimensions that are quite natural to the human design.
It probably is the case that because of his early experience with fairy tales, he could later in life say, and I'm quoting again, "A thought that makes me hazy, am I or the other people crazy?" So what else would you say we may be able to be liberated into when we approach the idea of art as a conversation? Where else is this pathway, this exploration leads for you? But for so many people, the great fascination with art is a desire to be liberated in some way, out from the and away from the restrictive nature of reality and the restrictive nature of consciousness in the way they experience mundane consciousness, the daily consciousness, the pedestrian consciousness. And art opens something else.
And it's great because it then kind of makes me think anew and afresh about, well, then what makes something art? Because what I'm getting right now is, to whatever degree a human is self-conscious all the time, some of the time, rarely, really is a great indicator of how much they might allow themselves to surrender to what's actually possible. And I'm reminded of a little video that made its rounds on social media recently of a choir of young children, probably teenagers, approaching teenagehood. And some of these children were outwardly extremely beautiful. And you could see as the video progressed how that had become already that early, but early enough to have, you know, grown self-consciousness, a prison for them, because they had somehow put roots into this external awareness and self-consciousness of how they appeared and how they were being perceived, received, seen. And in the middle of all these pretty, beautiful children was this little guy, and he was just, and they were singing, it was a choir. Most of the children were very self-conscious and not enjoying the moment at all. I mean, and partly I understand it, when you're sort of put to perform end of year, you haven't necessarily chosen it. But this little guy in the midst there, he was passionately going into the words. The other children were getting more and more embarrassed about this display of passion because they probably thought it was incredibly uncool. And yet there was this unrestricted, slightly sort of haphazard little boy with his glasses askew and hair sticking out, but he was not aware of any of that. He was just fully with the meaning of the song that they had been asked to perform. And of course, everyone in the audience looked at him because that's where life was happening. That's where life was coming through. And to me, it's just such an image of what goes on a lot of the time, even in the way we carry ourselves. Like I grab myself sometimes, well, now I don't live in the city anymore, so now it doesn't happen, but in the city, standing at a red light, and I suddenly catch myself standing in a particular way that might look attractive. And of course, it's not a conscious choice. Let me stand here and be attractive rather than unattractive. But I'm realizing that I'm allowing this consciousness of how I am seen and perceived to dictate a lot of alignments, a lot of the calibrations that go on inside, and that so much of my bandwidth goes to that external awareness and perception. And of course, therefore, does not leave it free for other more internally true things to come through. And so, yes, people were watching this boy, and that's where the life was. And hopefully he then doesn't get overfed by that attention, and that then becomes an act. So I think as humans, we are ongoingly challenged to this.
You're describing their art as the point where life appears, really, and how the youngsters of today were all exposed very early in their life to reality TV in all its forms and expressions, and how so early in life they get the image of themselves from the outside, and how there are some wonderful things about that in what it facilitates, but you are also alerting us to how that can be constraining and arresting, in that too early, prematurely, person, a young life, and then also adult life, get arrested in the performative view, in how they look from the outside, such that they lose the capacity to be in touch on the inside, which is in the first place what we are interested in and what draws us in. Hence your commentary about this particular video. I have not seen it, but I completely get the feel that sense of somebody who is perhaps crudely fashioned, crudely formed, or unrehearsed, and in that imperfection and lack of awareness, something else can actually come through, where in the very well rehearsed and already shaped for perfection, it is so perfect that there is nothing live and real that can come through. And so I am getting through this, the clearer sense that not only are we trying to discover art as a form of conversation, rather it's a live conversation, a conversation through which life can appear, through which we can truly get the sense of what you described as intimacy with life. And when that happens, we know we are in the presence of something else.
Well, there are so many threads to pick up, kind of juggling with them, saying where to go first. Well, one is, how and why is it that an end result, whether it's how one looks or what your singing sounds like or whether someone's going to like your painting or whatever it may be, and what a constriction that provides. And at least for me, it's a day-to-day, always continuing challenge to not be trapped in that, and to try to find ways in which to keep signaling to my systems that they're allowed to be open to perceive and open to translate and open to interpret and open to put things together in such a way that may never be seen by someone else, may be completely wrong, may have no relevance whatsoever, but just for the sake of keeping one's creative pipes clean.
Nice.
Can you say just a little more about how you do this, or what is the way, what are some of the practices that you engage in to, as you say, keep the pipes clean, keep the pipes ready to release you to whatever it is you want to gain access to? What is it you actually do? What is the practice?
Several ways. Something that has been going on for quite a while now is often, like these days, so much goes on Zoom, but it used to go on even before Zoom days. In a conversation or in a workshop where it was possible, in a situation where a lot of my physical activities, just listening and taking things in, I would have paper, pens, paints, and just allow myself to doodle or paint just to facilitate the flow. It's different for different people, but for me, if I'm not allowing myself something to do, it could be painting, it could be moving. Conversations where you walk and talk, in my experience, are always the most fertile, because you're staying fluid. You're leaving something behind. You're leaving the path behind just as the conversation unfolds. So they are just ways that come naturally. Something else that I actually just took up a few days ago was to, in the morning, if I can make the space, it unfortunately hasn't happened infallibly, but if I can make the space, I've got a little book, a little red book, and I've got a tub of crayons, and I look at the crayons and I allow myself to be caught by whichever color first strikes me, whether it's a color I've liked in the past or not, whether it makes any sense or not. I just go, zoom, pick up color, pick up crayon, and start making marks on paper. And to try to suspend any intention, any judgment of what it looks like or what it should be. And that's on one side of the one page, if you open the two pages. On the other side, because currently I'm not so much in a verbal phase. A couple of years ago, I went through a phase where every morning I sat down and before I was even fully awake, I would write. I would try to be as empty as I can, as vacant as I can, and just allow a word to come, and another word, and another word. And they were, sometimes they were like contemplations, sometimes they were like poems, sometimes they were like complaints, sometimes they were cries for help, sometimes they were just what seemed like gobbledygook, but that wasn't the point. It was keeping the space open, keeping the pipes clean, trying to suspend my terrifying inner judge. So back to my little red book. On one side, I make marks, colors. On the other side, I allow just a few words to appear. And it was not premeditated, but a few days in, I realized, well, I wondered whether it could be giving both brain halves the space to relax into a new day without being prejudged, without a to-do list, or without, oh, I'm going to show someone how good this looks. The verbal part.
Yeah.
And the visual contemplative part.
Yes. And what you're describing are a number of modalities or techniques, the essence of which is to allow yourself, as you said, to relax into the day, to sidestep any shoulds, should do this, should do that, and even go beyond that to sidestep the, well, again, the conscious framing, but rather allow the flow of something else to guide you into the day, whatever you'll call it, flow, intuition. And so some of the techniques you're describing, they enable you to enter or sustain the state you describe as vacancy, which perhaps can also be thought of as being freed up from the conscious frame or the conscious screen and being engaged in the flow of something else, where the vacancy is a facility for flow. Because once flow appears, in a way it's no longer vacancy. It's just that you forever are with the next thing that shows up. And that in itself is an indication or even a revelation about the nature of the conversation that we are seeking to describe in relation to art, because going with the flow of the conversation, going with the flow of art means you never, or at least for that phase of creative process and creative art, even me saying creative art is putting a name on it, and you are actually describing something that you refuse to put any name on or any title on, because it's the process that you're after rather than, as you said, a specific result.
There's another conversation I just realized listening to you that goes on when that happens, and it's a conversation in a way between me and myself, both encouraging and telling myself that I wish to create space for something new to appear without putting a preconceived demand on it. So in a way, I'm trying to print that into myself, that that is how I want at least part of my life to be. You know, there's living to be earned and tax to be paid and all the practicalities, but I want to dedicate the space where something can appear that hasn't maybe happened before.
Yeah, I almost got the sense of this, in a way, consciously shifting the conversation sometimes, because otherwise, how can we surprise ourselves? Mm-hmm. if we never get lost inside the conversation. And lost, one way I mean that is lost from everything we already know, everything we've already done, said, tried. And very often, a lot of conversations and a lot of outplay stays inside of the grids of the, in a way, already explored, already experienced. And that can be a great platform and also a great platform to return to. But unless we shift the conversation and try out from time to time new expressions and mix things up in new ways, there's something that starts congealing and kind of hold us back rather than allow us to move along. And yeah, I think this whole aspect of being able to surprise oneself and look at the page of whatever came out and go, well, that's curious. What is that? Mm-hmm. I think that affords a moment of space right there. And then, of course, hopefully not rushing to answer it, but simply realize that that's a new combination. What's that about? And carry that into the day rather than, well, that's beautiful or yeah.
What would you add to this out more from the standpoint of perhaps, as Rita shared, your practices that you use mm-hmm. to, as you say, to help yourself surprise yourself or go out of mm-hmm. the pattern that's already known?
So it's really, really similar in a way to what, Rita, what you were just describing, because these were also pages after writing a lot that I felt I wasn't really opening the door anymore to something fresh, something new to come through. And so I decided for a while in the morning to simply make a drawing. And it afforded this real, almost like opening up of, you know, you're walking along the path and suddenly you get to a new kind of clearing or a new kind of plateau and you get a different view. And instead of writing, oh, you know, there's this and this going on, I feel this a bit, looking at a drawing and seeing what entered the space that was provided. And it was a period, like I think if I had stayed on that and that is my routine, then that also might get stale and needs to be refreshed. But for the time, it really afforded a different kind of understanding and a different peek into what was actually going on and what was actually at play and trying to nudge me that I wasn't quite hearing in my more habitual going on. And unless I shifted up the conversation a bit and tried something else that would allow me to hear or see it in new ways, and then I wasn't going to quite be able to hear it or see it because I somehow, you know, had put some kind of blinders of habit on.
And right in what you said there, you accentuate, you emphasize the awareness of doing whatever you need to do to be able to hear, mm-hmm. doing whatever you need to do to be able to see, because the hearing, the seeing, the picking beyond what is already known is where and also is the impulse where something becomes possible.
It seems so important, like when all these wonderfully different human beings that we are, when there's this comparison that goes on and someone says, oh, well, but I can't sing as good as you, or, oh, my drawing looks like that. Whatever they had to add to the conversation, which is going to be utterly unique, it just is, it cannot not be, sort of goes missing. And it's almost like whoever has gained a skill, perhaps, or has been born with a certain amount of talent inside of a realm, it's not the first principle. It's really, what are you using it for? So if someone else comes alongside of you who perhaps doesn't have the skill, but they're going to have other skills, perhaps of insight or of stillness that they bring to the table, and suddenly together, if there isn't this comparing, oh, but I don't, you know, whatever it might be, if there isn't that comparing, suddenly we can weave together and have a much greater insight in the combining of our abilities.
Well, it's really just kind of a bit like variations on the theme. going back into people inspiring each other. Mm. And I was just sitting here wondering, why is it when people sing harmonies, sometimes very few people can sound like a much, much bigger choir? It's something that I had a lot of experience of before the virus and the lockdowns. We got together for years with a group of friends, and there were at the very most 10 of us. And sometimes it literally sounded like this massive choir. Mm. Sometimes we'd just record something just to hear back what did it sound like. And in that way, it's a mystery of how 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 can be much more than the sum total of the amounts of people with different facets, different resonances, different talents that come together. And it has like a cathedral effect, or it goes exponential in its resonance and its impact and its sweetness and joy, whatever it might be.
We attempted to approach this conversation today to explore, well, to explore art as a form of conversation. And on the run-up to today, everything in me was initially attempting to sidestep the formal conversation about what is art. I wonder if I can try to bring now almost a way to look at the space we have entered and been in over the last, this first part of the conversation, and look at it from another angle. Without the challenge is, can I do that without losing that unformed, in the moment emerging, unscripted space? Okay, so we've been now inside for a bit, art as a conversation. Because what we wanted to do here and are seeking to do here in Portals is to escape the traditional way that people come into domains. And then I still ask myself the question, so what is a way to think about art? And what surfaced was a little story of how it is typically and generally approached in the world, and perhaps an alternative way or an alternative dimension to bring into it, which in many ways we have already entered right as we started the conversation. Okay, so here we go. Most of the time when the subject of art will come up in the world, we will have two main schools of thought. One school of thought will focus on the art, and the second will focus on the artist. And you'll have people that will say, well, art is simply a reflection or a mirror of the artist. All we need to know is to deeply appreciate the story of the artist, what they've gone through, what they've experienced, their pain, their inspiration. And then there are those that will say, yes, but the art then becomes an object by itself, and it has a value by itself. And we have to be able to look at the art and almost separate it from the feelings and the intentions of the artist, and look at it almost in an objective way in terms of the form, the structure, the style, perhaps the period in history when that form of art appeared. Are we looking at a classical period or the romantic period or whatever? And sometime you'll have the people that will obviously integrate both the conversation about art as a form, as a structure, as a design, as a something that has even formal rules in various spaces, and will want to integrate the artist, her feelings and intentions, into the conversation. Well, I feel that we have attempted in the first part of our conversation to sidestep all that and essentially say we are interested to go beyond that dual focus, beyond focusing on the person or focusing on the object of art. And we did not really ask the question. We immediately stepped into a space that in a way is an answer to this question, which is, what is a way to shift from the dualistic focus, one that goes beyond focusing on a person and or on the object of art, or both? How can we transcend that and engage another dimension? And so when I thought about that, the question that appeared was that all forms of art aim to transfer something. What is it? And in many ways, we have already answered that in the first part of the conversation. We answered in some ways, what is the substance that's seeking transference? So I will unfold this story as though we didn't answer it, but the beauty is the answers are already here. And as I thought, what's the way to frame the answer to this question? I thought, well, we know that the human body or any living body, that it takes in food. And when the body is short of a specific nutriment or vitamin, well, we experience it by craving a certain food. And in a similar fashion, the body takes in water. And when we are not sufficiently hydrated, we thirst for water. And in a third place, in a similar way, the lungs take in air. And when we are short of oxygen, we feel that we are truly suffocating and are desperately gasping for air. So what can we say beyond these three? Well, we can say that the fourth element that the human system depends on, in addition to solid food, to water, to air, is really impression. The energetic impressions that come to us in variety of forms, when the inner lives, when the spirit, when the soul yearn for these new impressions, well, that's when we seek and when we create art. This is why it was so compelling that right when we started the conversation out, you said, for me, art is the place where we find intimacy with life, where we begin to develop a different kind of relationship with life. You were answering that question before we even asked it. So then I thought, okay, so what's a way to describe it in conceptual terms? Because some people will feel and get the sense and the feeling of the first part of the conversation, and they will still want us to conceptualize it. So here is a way to conceptualize it. So the shift from the dualistic focus is to attempt to integrate the invisible element, and the entire part of this first part of the conversation was we were exploring and sensing and intuiting the energetic, the essence, the invisible dimension. So all of a sudden, when we begin to talk about that third dimension, we can describe not just the artist and the art, but we can describe the journey or the exploration or the endeavor of the artist to develop, as you were describing, out contact, communication, connection with that essence. And perhaps, Rita, what you were describing with those Hungarian dances that, by the way, I love so very much as well earlier in life, though I can't trace a memory where I danced at the age of two for that. But perhaps that was your unrestricted, unbridled sense of the essence in that music coming to you that you were expressing in dance. So when we begin to enter this conversation where we allow ourselves to imagine and go beyond the form and the structure and the style of the art and beyond even the feelings and the intentions, because the feelings and the intentions, they are more the endeavor of the artist to discover or come into contact with some truth, with some motivating presence. Then now the conversation completely alters, because we can ask now a new question, not what form of art it is, not who the artist is, but we can ask a third question. What is the essence? What is the truth? What is the motivating presence that comes through the art? And I am reminded here, then I'll make the space for you to come on this, and I'm reminded here of an interview I've seen maybe 25 years ago, but it left such a powerful impression on me that I never forgot it. It was a conversation with Al Pacino, and he was talking about a time earlier in his life. He was already a known actor, but he wasn't as famous as he later became. And he was describing how he was playing in one of the Shakespearean plays. And he said the play was going well and the reviews were very positive and great. But deep inside him, he knew he still did not, I'm not going to use out your language, he still did not make the connection with the play. And he said, you know, people loved it and it was great, but I deep inside knew I still did not understand the play. And he said, and I get shivers even when I recall that, he said, on the 76th night, we were playing the show, and some 12 or 14 or 15 minutes into the first scene, the beginning of the play, something happened. He said, I don't quite know what it is, but all of a sudden, the stage, the way the stage was set, all the actors, my lines, my gestures, all of it connected up. It's as though I was able to see the play from above. I no longer played that character. I became that character. I became the play. You can say he connected to the essence of that Shakespearean play. And as a result, the performance now was imbued with a presence that initially Shakespeare sought to connect with. And as a result of that, the patron, the guests, the fans, the whoever, in whatever form of art, was able to experience that transference. So we are talking about the process of art rather than something else. Please, yes, Aud.
Well, and when you say transference, not only that something transferred to them, but they were transported. They were there. Through his connection, they were able to perhaps experience whatever the frequency, the vitamin, the cause of that play that he petitioned to be let into. And finally, something must have aligned itself differently in him as well, from this persistence to knock on the door that he actually got invited in. And because he was in a circumstance of sharing it, everyone there would have been also transported much closer to whatever that was about, that moment, that perhaps different time or whatever truth, essence, vitamin, frequencies was anchored in that play. Because it's almost like artists can lodge different vitamins, different places, where when we come later on in time and really manage to get in tune with what is locked in there, it becomes alive in the moment. We allow it to look into the now and the now to look into it. So it's this multidimensional access that has been won. And what an art. I mean, that's amazing. I know that I had the good fortune to be introduced to the concept of looking for what wrote it, what painted it, rather than who wrote it and who painted it. And that ever since has been this practice. And forgetting about it sometimes and just getting too absorbed by the end result or the human in question, perhaps if they're very charismatic. But this real search for what wrote it, I think it's such a freedom. It frees you both as participant in it or as witness to it up from the like and dislike or the location of the end result to becoming in yourself alive in the practice of detecting, of being like a slew, like a detective into what is behind this, what is speaking through this, what's the cause, what are the causing realms, what's the causation behind this painting or this story that is transferring to me, that's moving me, or that's almost niggling, irritating me, or whatever it is. So I think that's where the journey can begin, rather than, oh, I'm looking at that end result or at that person, but to rather be really curious about what moved them to write this, what's coming through.
Well, it's making me consider the other side of, well, the other side or the underpinning of that connective moment when it happens in art. And I had this picture in the Al Pacino story that was coming to my head of Al Pacino there on stage, day after day or night after night, and many nights after the rehearsal period, like making a signal.
Yes.
Saying,
yeah, exactly.
I want to connect to this. I mean business. And because of the 70-something tries, could it be that the essence of the play, somewhere in the great bank of Shakespeare vitamin, or Shakespeare or theatrical nutriment, heard his signal and said, oh, this man means business. are going to jump in. That's on one hand. On the other hand, what does it mean to keep signaling and to keep telling an artistic or essence connection that you mean business? There's so much shedding that needs to go on, so much that you just need to get rid of. Because I'm thinking of all the many doodles that end up in the waste paper basket to produce a Picasso drawing or painting or any artist. And that, you know, there's the labor and the perspiration. It's not just a moment of inspiration when you're uplifted.
Is it not the case that what artists from the beginning of time in all forms of art then, in one way or shape or form, whether knowingly or unknowingly, what they aspire, what they search for, is what you describe as that moment of connection, that moment when a different conversation opens up, that moment when they will describe the ecstasy of art as something else got to work through them, and they are picked up by that flow, by that energy, and it works through them. What makes it so very difficult in the world, which you both hinted to, is how even when that happens, it immediately gets characterized and placed as to do with a person, because we're so much interested in the person, the persona, the actor, the actress, the story of them. For all good reasons, what we are exploring here in this idea of art as a conversation, we are exploring a way to invite the curiosity, the inquiry, the petitioning mind to that other realm that can infiltrate through the process of art and that enable that something else. Some will call it a muse, some will call it flow, some will call it presence. The name is secondary. We're talking about something that flows through. And the distinction we are making that is so important is a difference between perhaps dead art and live art. Because, well, dead art can perhaps be thought of as something that was alive once, but that contact, that connection, that communion is broken or lost. Maybe because the artist got too interested in themselves and the energy that was coming their way. Maybe it's because, a lot of the time, it's because of what you talked to earlier, Rita, in the sense of the business of art, the money making. So the motivation is no longer that initial contact. And what we now have is the art has been commoditized, productized, and what is transferred is no longer the essence, but something else, almost like a packaged food, if you like, piece of art. And we are sensing, we are intuiting to the difference between that and the sense of live art, where the wires are still connected, where there is a riveting element because we don't know what's going to happen the next moment in the conversation, the next moment in the concert. And by the way, very important to note, live art can happen on the stage night after night when the artists are not there saying their lines or singing their songs. They're actually connecting to what caused in the first place that play or that song. And sometime on rare occasions, that becomes so inspiring and it develops a life of its own outside of the artist themselves, all the way to perhaps become a co-creative piece of art that can emerge with people outside and away from the original instance to now become a communion of many inside a larger, what you described as a cathedral experience. Cathedral in that perhaps to represent the idea of the multi-dimensional realms that open up such that the art can echo as it does in the cathedral because there are many of us. And the living portal that we each are gets to induct and be part of that co-creative conversation as it emerges. And I think the last thread in there to perhaps weave is, I think all artists that are still tethered to themselves, they're afraid of becoming commoditized and losing that contact, and yet the allure, the attraction of making a successful career in the world is so persuasive and so powerful, and the business of art and the money making of art is so compelling. But when that becomes louder and it overcrowds that other something else, then something is lost, which is why we see so many artists suffering and have suffered, because the original something that they perhaps sought to find, they missed the inner formation to think about it in these terms, and B, they caught themselves up in the act and forgot to remember that initial contact and connection that inspired them in the first place.
Well, maybe the most difficult thing to escape is one's success. Well, I'm kind of thinking on the move that an artist may have that connective moment when, you know, that's like a lightning strikes and everyone knows, artist and audience know that something happened that is live and that is very special. And how difficult can it be, and maybe more so if it's witnessed by many and confirmed and appreciated by many, how difficult can it be to leave that behind and surrender afresh to the next moment when the connection may happen differently? I'm just in awe of anyone who is actually able to stay fresh and open and itinerant and inquiring into trying to be one step ahead. Like, where is it now? It may move. It may not be where it was last night when the audience gave a standing ovation.
What I can see from this conversation also, that unless there is this internal ongoing inquiry in a way, conversation going on in whoever's doing the art or engaging with the art, that perhaps has within it an ongoing recentering to why they're doing it and what it is there to feed, then it's very easy to be taken off track by anything, really. And even this sense of what is it being measured against, which standards, beauty, but what if it's there to feed something completely different that doesn't really have anything to do with beauty, that has to do with innocence, which is also beautiful, but, and therefore it comes across in a certain way. But if everything is measured against a certain set of standards, it might seem to fall short and be, at least in that, in the more mainstream and popular realms, be dismissed. And then unless there's a process going on in the person that really builds in themselves a fortress in a way that would be there to also protect what comes to them, what knocks on their door because of their configuration, because of what they are moved by as a life, then they might never offer it into the world. And so I think there's also what comes alive in me is also the responsibility of each of us as humans to honor what knocks on our door or what we feel moved by, and to not so quickly measure it against the standards of someone or something else, but really much more have a live, ongoing inquiry about what is this? What is it for? How can I best serve it in a way? Which also takes it away from being perhaps so quickly then influenced by, oh, look how great I'm doing, or oh, look how terrible I'm doing. It takes the focus off oneself also, as which is such a pressure, I think, as anyone that sees themselves or identifies as being an artist, which I think there's nothing wrong with. It says someone has taken up in their life to respond through some of those artistic channels. And that's amazing. That's wonderful. Call yourself an artist, but then what's the work? What's the internal work that's going to really fortify your unique connections and perhaps unique blendings of vitamins that you can give a home and a space and an expression to?
Well, when you started this now, you in a way challenged all of us as audiences or as patrons of art to be enlightened patrons of art and audiences and supporters of art, and to be engaged in this inquiry of the what is behind this piece of art, whether it's music or the written or the visual or any other space of art. And on another conversation we have here on Portals, we have a conversation with Paul where he recounts an experience of once being in a concert and deciding that it was his job, his business, sitting in the concert hall, seeing that something was not working right for the conductor and the orchestra, to become for them the support to be able to get reattuned, reconnected to the craft and to the piece of music they were working on. And you're describing that kind of alignment. And then when you describe that inner fortress, I suppose that's the thread, that's the inquiry of this meandering conversation of ours today. We are asking, what are some of the practices and ways and rituals that allow us, that enable us to, as whether you call yourself an artist or not, to skate to the edge of what you know, to not fall in love with how we have known ourselves yesterday, to not be identified with I am such and such and I am this kind of an artist, or and to be forever in that malleable, not yet formed, emerging, discovering, newly fashioning flow, and be in that space, and be in that space like here we are in a recorded conversation, and there is in it forever the attempt, can I escape the self-awareness that we are recording this and actually forget to remember that? That is part of what truly great artists that inspire us, I think they offer us access to something in themselves that, and even when it is technique, and even when it is methodology, they have a way of sidestepping that or getting beyond that. And we're seeking this realm, this very realm, this very space of being alive player, being alive actor inside the experience of life. That is probably the essence we are after. One of those.
It's almost like flicking a switch in one's mind of pretending, perhaps, that one becomes invisible and whatever wants to give expression to becomes visible. So it's almost like disappearing. And unless I can disappear enough for myself and others not to overly identify me to just the physical form or whatever I've done so far, it can be very hard to let in new things. But I think it's possible to play with that switch, to practice playing with that switch and almost fade a bit. And that would almost be like a scary concept, at least also in the world. You want to stand out, you want to be vibrant. I don't know, this is a fire sign talking, but you know, in whatever, however you would say that, oh, these are the signposts that say that I am here, that I'm alive, almost let them go.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Know that at the other end of disappearing a bit more, something new will be able to reappear in you and through you.
I just wanted to offer an image that keeps popping up in the state, the inner state of being an artist, whether you're recognized as one or not. It feels almost like a kind of tightrope walker state.
Yes.
Not really needful to expand on why. It just, the image is very alive in me.
Well, so how about if we bring this conversation to conclusion, or to a pause at least, with both images, walking on a tightrope, and where you are forever in the balance of the movement of that, because somehow you're able to maintain a focus that's not self-aware, that you are possibly walking on a tightrope that's very high wire walk, alongside with the image that you offered out, which is that you, can we flip the switch? Can you even try that as a mental exercise? And instead of being focused on oneself from the outside of how do I look and how do I sound and how do I come across, there is a readiness to flip a switch where we begin to disappear for ourselves, almost as though we go down a, a black hole and we become not the person, but we surrender to that something else, that other realm that we seek to become a vessel for or a conduit for, and let that shine rather than me, the person. Perhaps we can leave it with these two images.
Thank you.
That sounds amazing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Portals of Perception. If you're enjoying these dialogues, we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and a review at ratethispodcast.com/portals. Visit portalsofperception.org for exclusive content. Please share this episode with a friend and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.